Hey, this is Steve. Good evening, everyone. Tonight we have Jim Connor of Jim Connor Banjo on again. Jim is America's famous old-time banjo player. And hey, Jim, how are you tonight?
Oh, great, Steve. Glad to hear from you.
Well, we really appreciate your time again. And the last time we spoke, you were talking about your early days at Harvard. So why don't we just pick that up where we left last time and tell us a little bit about your Harvard experience.
Well, I went to Harvard in the late 50s, class of 1960, and it was kind of like to my friends who had never known anybody that ever went to Harvard. Nobody in my hometown really knew anybody that had gone there. Indeed, nobody from my high school had ever been there or the high schools around in our county. But it was kind of like you were going to the moon, you know, way off, 1,000+ miles to New England and in Massachusetts. That's where Harvard is. And it was very interesting. And it was fascinating meeting people from all over the world and meeting quite a few from New England who populated Harvard. But, you know, Harvard draws from every country in the world, practically, a few students each anyway. But to help me were some Southerners at Harvard. And in my class, there were 15 Alabama people.
Really?
Out of the 1,200 or so members of the class. There were 15 from Alabama. There were a few from Mississippi and Georgia and Tennessee, and you would get to know them over the first year or at freshman gatherings and things, you know, because the freshmen lived together in a Harvard yard, they call it, in the freshman dorms, and it's only freshmen in the Harvard yard. And so you kind of get to know everybody in your class over the months, and they helped you. But of course, the upperclassmen you would meet, a few from the South, would also be there to advise you and things like that. But it was fascinating. And frankly, my folks, it was so remote to them. And they just had a little, daddy worked at the steel plant in Gadsden. Mother, of course, was just a housewife. And they didn't have the funds or they had a little Dodge Dart car back then and were never able to visit me while I was at Harvard, frankly. But it was a great time and great time to meet people. And you're just so enthused. And also the new environment just fascinated me because I love to learn about new things. You know, I'd been to camp. I had been once to Chicago on an accordion convention organized by my accordion teacher from my hometown. And so I had been somewhere, but I had never been to the Boston area where Harvard was.
So were there a lot of banjo players in that city?
Well, it's very interesting. This was the late 50s, and Earl Scruggs was getting and his bluegrass banjo out of the Grand Ole Opry and broadcast, you know, and television was just getting good. And everybody was getting a TV set, and the Grand Ole Opry was being televised, if not every week, occasionally all around the country. As you may remember, I don't know, but you may not remember. You may not be old enough. You may not be old as I am. But anyway, there were several banjo players, and there was one really good one who had really watched, and I don't know where actually he had learned it from as far as which teacher had taught him, but I know that he watched television every Saturday to see Earl Scruggs on the Grand Ole Opry and had imitated him. His name was Bob Siggins, and he was from the Midwest, and he played a real nice Scruggs-style banjo. And so now I had been playing the old time style in a little bitty small banjo back in my hometown, but I didn't even take it with me. Now, when I was talking to the authorities at Harvard, they mentioned that everybody on a scholarship is guaranteed a job for extra money. and if you can play an instrument, we'll see about that. And I said, well, I play accordion. And they said, well, bring your accordion, because there are all sorts of places, not clubs and commercial places, but like nurses' conventions or church gatherings in Boston that would love an accordion, because, you know, the Irish and the English people populated Massachusetts, you know, going back to the Pilgrims. Sure. And accordion was very, you know, if you could play polkas and stuff, you could always play.
Yeah, pick up some one.
Yeah, and they said you could make a little money, and I did. Sure. I played part of my freshman year, 10 or 15 churches and nurses and a civitan organization, Little Lions Club and stuff, and played the accordion.
That's great.
And so I did make a little money, but I did not take my little banjo with me. I just didn't think about it. Sure. Well, when I got there, I heard Bob Siggins. He was in my freshman class, and a couple of guys playing folk song. Well, they were doing kind of country and the current folk song that was starting to be popular, you know, like Pete Seeger songs and those Woody Guthrie songs and things that were popular outside the South, but they knew those, and I thought, oh yeah, and so I could play along with them. And I thought, well, I got to get a banjo. And Siggins said, well, they got them in the pawn shops down in Boston. So I went down there and bought me a banjo, I remember, for $35, and a harmony guitar, flat top guitar, for $25 that had a good sound. And I began playing around with them. The banjo and guitar. I already played a harmonica, and I always carry a harmonica with me, Steve. Since I was 5 years old, I have carried a harmonica in my pocket. I even carried it to Sunday school. And you can buy a little harmonica about 2 inches long, and it's in a little case, a Hohner. It's a very good harmonica. Only has eight notes. It has four holes, which give you eight notes, one scale. And you can play things, and I carried one of those little ones in my pocket forever, but I had that in my pocket, but I needed a larger one, a Marine Band, which is a good professional harmonica. So I remember I had left all my Marine Bands at home, so at the pawn shop, I bought me a Marine Band for $1.25.
Wow.
And today they're $50.
Yeah,
but
wow.
I bought a Marine Band, so I began playing a little bit of harmonica and playing banjo and learning, actually, from playing the banjo and the guitar as I went along.
So was that the first time you start getting that that bite from the music bug about going around and working with other people? And
you're absolutely right. And Siggins and a couple of more people formed a group. And they jokingly named it the Charles River Valley Boys.
Oh.
And it's a joking name, because there is no Charles River Valley. There is a flat plain around Harvard, and the Charles River flows through it and to the ocean, but there's no valley at all. It's a edge of the ocean flat plain, and so it was facetious to call it Charles River Valley, and they thought that was cute, and it was cute. And they started playing little shows on the weekend, or playing a little concert at Wellesley College or Radcliffe College, mostly to meet girls. we were all single, and I occasionally played with them on those concerts. Yeah.
So how did that all work out? How did you break out from Harvard, playing with the Charles River Valley Boys to leaving Harvard and going on the road? Where did that courage come from? I mean,
it didn't take any courage. I was so enthused because, well, here you are, you're 19, 20, 21, and you play in a group, the folk era, the folk music era, started in the 50s, but it had not gone national yet, and it more or less started in New England, and so that's where we were.
Oh.
And I started picking up on other songs rather than the southern mountain folk songs of the Appalachians and the country music out of Nashville.
Yeah. Yeah.
And but I knew all the current hits out of Nashville and the traditional songs of the Appalachian Mountains because I'm from the Appalachian Mountains. Sure. And my grandmother sang, 100 songs that she had learned as a child in the mountains. And mother played piano and sang, and my sure. cousins and my other family all played the old-time mountain songs. So those songs just fit right in the new folk era, they called it. The folk era was a little more politically oriented, but, of course, I ignored that. I just wanted to play the music. I knew songs, but then the new ones you would learn, like Woody Guthrie's song, This Land Is Your Land, or Pete Seeger's song, Wherever All the Flowers Gone, we just became part of that repertoire in New England and eventually led to the folk boom of the 60s. But so playing with the Charles River Valley Boys, now I wasn't a full member of the Charles River Valley Boys. I didn't really travel around with them, but I played with them quite a lot, mainly the harmonica, because they had guitar and banjo players and a fiddler, but they didn't have a harmonica player.
Sure.
And I think I play the harmonica the best. I play it better than I play the banjo because I've been playing the harmonica since granddaddy taught me at 5 years old when I was a kid, you know. And anyway, I was getting better and better the 4 years I stayed at Harvard. And then I came back home and wanted to my mother wanted me to be a doctor, and she'd always ask me, now you'll be a doctor, won't you? And they had never gone to college. My daddy didn't go to college. And my grandfather had, daddy's daddy, had done a couple of years at Clemson in the late 1890s when Clemson was a military school. But he had left Clemson, joined the Army, and gone to Cuba with Teddy Roosevelt during the Spanish-American War. And of all the hundreds of kinfolks I had, he was the only one that had ever done any college in 100 years. Oh. But he didn't finish. But anyway, and he had, when he got out of the military after the Spanish-American War, he met my grandmother, and they married, and they moved to Alabama, and that's where we came from. Sure. And so the thing is, okay, to go back, I got out of Harvard. I came home, and mother said, well, now, did you finish pre-med? And I said, no, mother, I took some courses, though. And she said, oh. So I had met some people from West Alabama University in Alabama. There's some kids. And I had met people who went to Birmingham Southern College. And so I went down to West Alabama and took some courses in to finish my pre-med. And mother was proud of me. And so then, but I was interested in music and theater and such stuff. I'd been in some theater in high school in Gadsden High. And I didn't do much theater at Harvard at all. I think I was in one play the whole 4 years, but did a lot of music there. But I went on to Birmingham Southern, that someone had told me they had a fabulous theater department, which they did. And I went there several semesters, and each semester I was in two plays. So I did about five or six plays that year at Birmingham Southern and enjoyed acting a lot. And some of them had music and some of them didn't. And then I got a further degree from Birmingham Southern at the end of that year, and Richard Locke Miller, who was my high school buddy and had gone to a year or so of college, but he was interested in acting. And he took off to New York out of college. He went to Auburn for a year or two, and then he was in plays, and his bug was to act. And he was a good singer, though. We had sung together in the same choir in Gadsden High School, which was a really fine choir. We had a wonderful choir director, Edsel Hand. And, he taught us to sing. And the way he taught the choir, you didn't feel like his teaching was burdensome. You just loved him. And he really helped Richard and I to develop our voices. So in the meantime, I hadn't seen Richard in several years because he had joined the Army. And but he had gotten out of the Army after 2 years service and came back to home and got a job And I graduated from Birmingham Southern, and Richard and I started singing and playing together.
So
and
he played so at guitar. This time, so at this time, you guys are still doing your own thing, probably interested in theater. You really didn't have the idea of going out to play music at this point. You guys were out liking theater and working on your voices, right? So it wasn't like a plan that you guys were going to go out and go out on tour, was it, at this point?
No, not a plan exactly. But Richard and I, on the weekends, started playing little clubs around Birmingham, Alabama, especially in the suburb of Homewood, Alabama. There were two small clubs there, and they wanted a guitar and a banjo player to play the current folk kind of, you know, popular music that was played on the radio now in the folk era of the early 60s, 61, 62, 63. And I graduated from Birmingham Southern in 62. We were already playing on the weekends these little clubs.
Gotcha.
And Richard was a fine flat top guitar. And he, in the meantime, was in plays at Town and Gown Theater in Birmingham. Then his play ended. That summer I graduated from Birmingham Southern, his play ended, and we could play like almost every night that summer at clubs around Birmingham, and we're playing the music from our childhood because his dad had been a traveling country musician in the 30s before he joined World War II and became a military man in World War II, his dad, and Richard had that tradition, and I had the tradition of my grandparents just singing every time we went there. They would sing for hours and teach us songs and stuff. But so we knew a lot of country and folk songs. And we started almost full time that summer of 1962. And people complimented us. And I had just met Arthur. I had met Arthur Kuykendall the year before and gone to his house. Every weekend I was off Birmingham Southern at home. I'd take mother and daddy's car and drive up and spend the evening with Arthur Kuykendall on Saturday night and just sit and watch him play and play. And I did that solid for a year that I was in Birmingham Southern. And at the end of that year, I was playing like he was playing. I was just thinking, well, maybe I can play as good as him, but I was just so intense to learn and practiced all the time.
Sure.
And so graduated from Birmingham Southern in 62. So that let me free to play every day. And Richard had a job in the daytime. And when he wasn't doing play rehearsal at night, which in the summer, I remember there wasn't a play he was doing. And we were playing almost every night. And this fellow walks in after a few weeks and here's us at this little tiny club where people packed that place, and they actually violated regulation. It was so many people packed in there, there were no room for anybody to sit down in the chairs. Wow. And they would just stand up and pass the beer. It's like a room, but like 20 by 20 packed with 40, 60 people just passing the beer from the bar back over, you know, the waitresses could hardly. It was just so popular. And the people hadn't heard the folk music or the country music played in these kind of clubs yet. Only the cowboy clubs or the Nashville-type hillbilly clubs, we call them. And so this fellow was very well-dressed, polished shoes, a white shirt, and well-groomed. And he said, how would y'all like to tour Europe? And we laughed like, oh, sure, we'll tour Europe. Yeah, man, just send us a ticket. Well, He had been a former producer for the playhouse that Richard had done some plays, and he found out about him. The guy probably is serious. And so it was just a few weeks. We had a ticket on the Queen Elizabeth to go to Europe. And
is that right? Wow.
For 4 months and made two albums there in Europe, one in England and one in France. And the English one came over here. I remember he said 1,000 copies were sent over to America. And one of the producers for Capitol Records heard that album. And it was on Folklore. You can still find it occasionally on eBay. It was on Folklore Records and it was R&J, Richard and Jim, sing American folk songs. And we came back after 4 months, and we landed in New York. And Richard had been up there to exploring acting and stuff in Greenwich Village, in those little Greenwich Village experimental theaters, prior to going to the Army. And he said, "Hey, we can. There's clubs here we might play." And we went in to try it out, and we started getting jobs. And one night, a fellow was sitting there, and he said, "Hey, I heard your album." And we said, "Oh, you did? We didn't know. We haven't seen anybody around here that had it." He said, "Well, somebody sent it to me at Capitol Records in Hollywood." And we said, "Oh, they did?" And he said, "I got a contract here for y'all to sign on Capitol Records." And we go like, "Really?" And we looked at it, and it said, "You'll make at least one album, and if it's pretty good, we'll make another." And so that's the way, it's always optional to make the next album if your album doesn't sell. We did make two for them. So we signed it, and then in a month, he arranged for us to come to California, first time I'd ever been, and we recorded our first album of Richard and Jim called Two Boys from Alabama, Richard and Jim. And we made that album, and that started our commercial recording career and touring.
That's great. So that's how it all started. That's a wonderful background there. So I think if we could pick this up on our next conversation, if you still have some time. I know that you're out and about doing some gigs and things. I'd love to talk a little bit more about how that transformed into some of the other things that you know, interesting people you met along the way.
We met them in California at that time. So many people were out there in the 60s. Oh, we met them all, and it was fascinating. It's not so much that I had all this driving desire to be a star. It was just that the whole environment was so fascinating, Steve. Like you say, meet people. Oh, we met the Kingston Trio. We met Barbara Streisand. We met John Denver before John Denver ever even had a record label, and years before he did. And we were able to open the show for Barbara Streisand in New York because she wanted a folk group to open her show, and she had not yet exposed herself to the national audience. And so we were in her early shows when she did clubs and opened. Of course, she's from New York. And so it'll be fascinating to talk about that.
That's great. So why don't we pick up next time, and you can tell us some more of those stories about how you met some of these folks and how your music went from one side of the world to the next.
Love it. Love it. Love to.
Thanks, Jim. Good night now.
All right. Good night. God bless.